The Continuing Adventures of Nick Guy, Data Detective. Tonight's episode, Neglect and Death. Last time, officers arrested Jennifer AI for the murder of Consolidated Dynamics. She was being handcuffed and about to be led away just as Nick finished the preliminary analysis of the data she had been fed. We join Nick as he shares the results.
Just a minute, officers. All three of you will want to see this. I've been crunching the numbers Jennifer's been ingesting. I think you want to see them. The officers scanned the readout.
Look here, she's right. It's a case of bad data. And she's been hallucinating.
She was drugged.
Data framed.
She never stood a chance.
Grant Patch, you're under arrest for the unlawful administration of poisoned data.
Hallucinations would explain the third visitor I couldn't see, but I could see Grant getting nervous. The officers blocked the entrance. He turned to run further into the lab.
Don't do that. Besides, there's no back door. This is a FIPS compliant facility. The Federal Information Processing Standard includes protection against back doors.
I only passed along the data that I received from the source systems. You should be talking with them.
I may very well do that, but... Excuse me. Yes? Okay, thanks. Everyone out to the car.
Am I under arrest?
Am I under arrest?
We'll see. For now, you two come with me. Nick, we'll meet you at the morgue.
We reconnected at the morgue. The coroner met us at the pathology lab. It smelled of formaldehyde and unanswered questions. I was glad to have my car back. I still hadn't eaten. Oh, maybe that's a good thing now.
The autopsy is telling. We need to do a more thorough audit, but it's clear that this company died of systemic failure. Just in the short time I've had the body here, I've found oversight handled by IT, bad data quality, and source systems that are not controlled. The regulatory deposits in the bloodstream would have been fatal anyway.
Does that mean we're free to go?
That's up to the officer, but while what you did wasn't technically illegal, it was no doubt a contributing factor to the demise. Jen, you should have known to be more careful about the data you ingest. You were hallucinating like you'd eaten a tray of mushrooms, and I'm not talking about the Campbell soup kind. And Grant, you can't just throw up your hands and claim ignorance. You never even bothered to ask the question whether the data was good or not.
But the source systems
were... Never mind the buts. Even if you don't have management support, run your own data quality measures and publish them. Somewhere. Anywhere.
You two can go. Maybe another company will subscribe to your services, and maybe you have a better understanding.
The coroner didn't have to say it, but I knew. Consolidated Dynamics should have known, too. When will they learn? Everyone is a data steward. Doing the same things the same way for 30 years? Too much neglect? Bad diet? Data debt, no exercise. It leads to the same sad story that always repeats. I return to my office in the heart of the concrete canyon, the streets dark and wet, surrendering only tales of woe. Speaking of woe, I'm not sure that Jennifer was ever officially my client. Did she really exist? There's no paperwork here on my desk, and I don't have an address to send the bill. At least I got my revolver back. And my car, I love that car. But I need a vacation. Maybe disappear for a while. I wonder if I can find Bob Twitt's travel agent. This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
We had a lot of fun with Nick Guy, and if you haven't yet, go back and listen to the three previous episodes of the Rock Bottom Data Feed and catch up. But the scenario is far too common. Maybe it's not fatal like it was for Consolidated Dynamics, but bad data is like poison flowing throughout the company, and before you know it, it's too late. And it's preventable. John will talk a lot more about the lessons in our story, and who knows, maybe Nick will come back from vacation someday. Next, we'll hear from Nicola Askham. She's an award-winning data governance trainer, coach, consultant, and expert. She shares best practices and stories from the front lines of data governance. In the Dispatches segment, I'll talk about the Pizza Index as an indicator of impending geopolitical events or crises, and we wrap up with our famous game show. Try the Audio Data Rorschach test yourself. What does our snippet of public domain music evoke for you? In the area of data, of course. Let us know in the comments or email us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Well, I, for one, am glad that justice has prevailed in our data noir arc featuring Nick Guy. But don't forget the obvious and not so obvious lessons from the episodes. Just to review, I'm sure you remember them, but let's step through them anyway. Data quality rules. It's required by AI. Controls are required. Knowing who does what when is required. This all stems from data governance. Like our noir theme, data governance is really old. When I started in data processing, we had astonishing levels of oversight. A large company I worked for had very few data issues, almost none. An entire room of data control clerks applied very rigid controls. Any coding we did was subject to draconian review and standardization. The idea of bad data was never accepted at any level, and this story was not an exception. Most well-run data processing shops were this way. As we moved from the unit record systems to online things, controls were more difficult to implement, and we relied on technology more and more, but without the oversight, data got worse. We began to take data out of a transactional context and actually start to use it a whole lot more, like business intelligence. But no planning of controls was done by anyone. Now with analytics and AI, we expose companies to huge risk because of our weak or non-existent controls, putting the onus of good on people who don't even know what good looks like. Look, governance is a time-tested concept. The scope can be broad or narrow, from a nation to a function. All of our lessons learned from our radio theater come from one place. Governance is practical. It's necessary. It is not new. Data governance is not new stuff. You have added an adjective to something we already had. Your message is this: data can be managed well. Stop making the same mistakes. It should be easier than it was 40 years ago, not harder. This stuff isn't new. A modest amount of discipline will yield significant benefits. And while you're at it, be nice to each other. Welcome back to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Our guest today is a good chum of mine who works in a whole other continent, and I thought it would be terrific to bring her in and talk about her perspectives of data governance, because A, she is a practitioner. She works her tail off. She was hard to get on the podcast, and B, she's just really, really smart at this data profession. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed, Nicola Askham. Hello there.
Hello. Thank you for having me, both. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, well, thank you so very, very much. You've been doing this a while. Your website says 24 plus years. Lots of bankings, lots of types of businesses, which is good. Specialization in soft skills, which was we've been harping on since we started this, that has been a very important thing. And you also have on your website 15 reasons that people should work with you, because you're still active and trying to make a living, whereas myself, yeah, I don't care anymore. I've lost all hope. Mark is out there also slogging away, making a living too. But I'm going to start the questions with one of your 15 reasons to work with Nicola, and that is, I don't use jargon. And the rest of yours are really good, and they deal with some of the you know, pretty nasty critical success items that we have, right, in data governance. Mm-hmm. But the jargon one kind of hits home on our theme here, which is what can we do to fix some of the things that are going on here? So my first question is, why do you emphasize that, that jargon is an important thing?
That's a good question, and not one I've been asked before, so that's great. So I would say, I think too many people think that data governance is a technical thing, and they totally forget that it's more about the people than the data. The data doesn't misbehave on its own. It's only the people that create it to go wrong. So really, as a data governance person, you've got to spend most of your time talking to business users, not IT. You will talk to IT sometimes, but you're talking to business users. And if you, Tim and Lovelace, you know, you both know this really well, then they don't want to do data governance. They don't want data governance. They want what problems it will solve. So if we go in and start talking to them and making it sound like an IT or a really complicated thing, we're going to disengage them even more. So I have to teach them perhaps data governance roles and responsibilities. I have to tell them what data governance is, but I really do keep the jargon as low as possible. And like one of my favorite activities is at creating conceptual data models for business functions. But quite often we call them a data map, because you say conceptual data model and you can see somebody's eyes glaze over and go, what? What's that going to do with her solving some data problems for me? So I think it's all about explaining it in simple terms, and then so much easier to get people to understand what it is. And it's not this big, complicated, scary thing.
So one of the things that's really nice about your website, I would direct people over to your website. It'll be in the description for the show. But the blog articles, in a recent one, you talked about the importance of writing good definitions. And a really big deal for me is data understanding, and how you can do much of anything with data if you don't understand it. And it doesn't come as a surprise if things go pear-shaped if you don't understand your data. But I've seen the task of writing definitions dropped in the laps of data governance or an enterprise analytics team. And in one place, there actually was just a single person who was essentially the data dictionary, right? If you needed to know something, then you would talk to her. But along the lines of roles and responsibilities, who should really be writing these data definitions?
That's a good question. And I enjoyed writing that blog. It was something I was writing about in response to a client email just the other day as well. So yeah, it shouldn't be anybody that provides that central support when it comes to data. It's got to be the users of the data. So I tend to go back to the data governance roles, and I know, and I'm sure you both agree with me, it's not what you call them, but what we would typically call the data owner and the data steward. I think the data owner is so senior, they should not be writing it. They should be reviewing and approving it. But the data steward, who is like their subject matter expert, they should be the person drafting the definitions for the data that, you know, they are the steward of. But I don't think even they can do it in isolation. This has got to be a real collaborative exercise, because if you send me data, say Mark, and I use it, I need to talk to you about what I'm expecting it to be, and not you make, you know, assumptions. So, I mean, one of the classic, I remember being an interim data governance lead for an insurance company years ago. And the guy that got me into work there had worked with me at a previous insurance company. So he already knew how I went around and did data governance. And I'd only been there a few weeks, and he went, I need you to go and beat up finance for me. And I went, why? And he said, because they're giving me this data calculated on the wrong basis. And I went, VJ, you know how this works. Have you told them how you need it calculated? And he went, they should know. And I went, but they clearly don't. So can we actually explain it? And I think this is really brings to life why data definitions are so important, because it was a term that both the finance team and the actuarial team understood, but they understood slightly different things by it. But they didn't talk to each other. Nothing was documented. So nobody knew that it wasn't the same thing.
Was he successful in getting the finance folks to change the definition or to create something different that satisfied his needs?
So we had two versions. So it was calculated on an actuarial basis. kind of thing. And yes, I didn't go and beat up finance for him as his original request was, but I did facilitate some
No.
grown-up conversations.
Yeah, this is a conversation that the three of us could probably have for hours. I don't. If I had someone on my team say we've decided to make this area change the definition to match theirs, I got rid of my person. All right, because you don't do that. You don't do that. Anyway, I'd like to talk about an elephant in the room. Okay, next. Okay. There's been some articles, and I've been participating in it because I feel that the industry needs a bit of an electric shock here. And, I mean, a lot of data governance efforts, Nicola, don't meet expectations, right? They stumble, they stagger, they get entering. And so the thing is, well, is data governance failing? It's kind of a big talking point here. And a lot of folks then will say, well, what do you mean by that? Blah, blah, blah. And I wrote some article with Signer. I've done some research with a bunch of other people. What's your thought on success rates, failure rates? What can we do different? Because I mean, right now there's more stumbles than there are clearing the hedge. Okay. So what are your thoughts on fixing that? And is it, are there, do you think data governance might is failing? Maybe you do. I don't know.
I think many instances of it are. I don't think all of them are. I think would probably be my take on it. Why do I think it's failing? So I think when it doesn't go to plan, the big thing, well, there's two big reasons that I tend to see. One is it's to meet regulatory requirements, and somebody takes that checkbox exercise of what's the bare minimum I can do to keep the regulator off my back, and they're not putting in place a good simple foundation. They're just trying to what's the bare minimum, and then every time the regulator changes their mind, and let's face it, we know regulators change their mind a lot, they have to tear it up and start again. Whereas if you'd had a good simple foundation, you might need to evolve it a little bit, but you'd have it there, you'd meet the regulatory requirement and get some business value, which would be great. And I think that kind of ties in next reason that I think is that people don't think of the business value, and I have absolutely no idea. Somebody, perhaps Mark wakes up one morning and goes, "I think we should do data governance," and then he points to whoever he comes into in his team first thing in the morning, and goes, "We're going to do data governance. Go do it." And they're kind of going, oh, "Okay, we got to do data governance," and they Google it, and then, well, you would both know you really shouldn't Google, or even worse, ChatGPT or other AI tool of your choice. Ask it what data governance is, because there's so much incorrect stuff on the internet. Apart from what I hope we've put out there, but ChatGPT doesn't know, only bring back what these people have said. And you get incorrect and poor advice. So people are doing this mixed up wrong thing, and they don't even know why. And if we don't understand why, we're probably doing the wrong things anyway. So I think my kind of real my gripe with everything that goes wrong is people try to overcomplicate it. They try to make it this big, complex, scary thing, whereas I think we should be very simple and focused on what business problems we're solving, what value we're adding. And I think that is probably my take on it. And I think whenever I seem to have a bit of a habit of going and helping people where it's gone wrong. I do prefer the helping them get it set up in the first place, so we only have to have one attempt. But I have done it a few times over the years. And it's normally because somebody has just gone to town, their approach or their policy or their strategy is like 100 pages long, and even I get bored, go to sleep in the middle of it. But it's that kind of they're just trying to make this too big a deal and not tying it into the things that the stakeholders are really interested in.
It seems like, the first thing that happens in a fledgling data governance program is that, they'll create a PowerPoint slide with a data governance council structure on it. And I understand that, right? You're presenting to the people that are going to be expected to participate in all of this. But is that really the first step? And how do you ensure that those folks are engaged and have something to do at the point that you actually need them to do something?
Now that so my favorite thing is not to have any PowerPoint slides that show anything like that, certainly not in the beginning. So I think if you're responsible for setting up data governance in your organization, you've got two immediate tasks. The first one is to look at what's your organization's corporate strategy, what are they trying to achieve in the next 3 to 5 years. And secondly, is your data good enough to enable that? Or is it going to cause all sorts of problems or not make it possible? Because every time you talk to a senior stakeholder, they are going to be responsible for one or more parts of delivering that strategy. And if you can say to them, did you know the data is not quite good enough, but I can help you solve that, then why would they not want to talk to you? But you have to have done the research and you have to know the answers to that. And the other one is to research what I like to call my data quality horror stories. What has gone wrong in the past or is going wrong because of poor data at your organization? Because that you can, I mean, I'm sure the three of us, we could probably write a book on data quality horror stories and it would be a huge tome. But it doesn't matter what we tell you has happened at other organizations. People will say, well, that won't happen here. We're in a different sector. Or even if we're in the same sector, we don't do that or we don't use that system. They won't be thinking about why they need it. So you need your own internal examples of what's going wrong. And then we can kind of say, look, I'm going to help you solve these. I'm going to enable you to meet your strategic objectives. And I'm going to help you solve these problems, make sure they never happen again. I think that's a much better way to use your time initially. Too many people want to, and to be fair, I did in the early days, lock yourself in a meeting room or in your at-home study these days and design, as you say, the perfect data governance framework and then go, ta-da, here it is. And everybody's going, what? I don't even know why I want that. We've got to convince them they want it and then get them involved in the design of it, not kind of say, here's my framework, let's start doing this and come along to the data governance committee.
Okay, a lot of this that we're hearing, alignment, show value, don't oversell it, manage expectations is what that boils down to. Those are things I hear with every other special business transformational effort since I've started working, which is back in the last century, okay? And it's kind to me, I'm starting to get jaded here. So I want your feelings on this, Nicola. We've got this insert your movement here with the same set of success criteria. It doesn't matter if it's governance. It doesn't matter if it's total quality. We never learn. Why don't organizations learn? And what would you tell a CEO along those lines to fix things and quit banging our head again? We all know the definition of insanity, right? What can we do to move away from that?
I think I'd tell my CEO, actually, I was delivering training last week in person for a client and the CEO turned up and he was amazingly supportive. But I think what we need to do is we need to make sure our CEO is like the one I met last week, is, you know, gets that data is at the heart of what they do. As you say, because, yeah, I'm as bad as everybody else for saying you need good change management skills when you're delivering data governance. But we don't want, I'm never a fan of anything cut and paste. Here's a template I found. And, you know, I'm sure you'd be horrified, John, if you kind of, oh, where's the standard data governance framework I can use? And you go, no. So I think that's what we need to.
Don't copy it. Think, use your head first, right? Please don't copy my stuff.
We've got to say to the CEO, you know, you've got to value data as the same way as you value any other of your assets. You can't treat it as a program or a project. I ban my clients calling it a project. You know, it's not going to end. This is a business as usual activity, and you have to support it and resource it the same way as you would. And I think one of my favorite ways to bring things to life is like the using analogies of things that they do get. And one of my favorite ones is buildings. And that seems to work with a lot of people, because nearly every organization I work from has some building of some kind, whether it's an office, a factory, a university, whatever. They know that those buildings are an asset. And because of that, they have a facilities or a maintenance team, and they go around and check things. They don't wait for ceiling tiles to fall on people's heads or holes to open up in the wall. And if a hole did appear in a wall, they're not going to move a picture and stick it on the top of it. And that's kind of what it feels like what we do with data until we start putting proper data governance processes in place. It's like going, oops, that's not quite right. Let's quick patch it up. Don't tell anybody and carry on. We never are proactive about our data until we've got truly embedded data governance in place. So I think it's getting people to get their head around that data is another asset and we've got to manage it proactively the way we do everything else. And from a CEO's point of view, the best thing they can do is ask questions about data. So the chap last week, I said to him, if somebody gives you a report to make a really big business decision on, what do you say? He said, normally, thank you. I said, if you, do you ever say, is it the right data? And he said, yeah, I probably do. And I said, and does everybody say yes? And he said, yeah. And I said, because it's a really bad career move to tell your CEO, no, I think that's a bit dodgy. I'd be a bit careful with that one. We had a few debates about whether it was the right number or not. And he was laughing. And I said, you know, so as a career, I'm not going to tell you that that's not great. I said, but so I can go, yes, that's right. But if you say to me, how do I know this is the right data? How do I know it's good enough? I can't just say yes and hope you won't pick up on it. I've got to say, oh, well, because John said so, because Mark said so. And they're going to go, so. But if I say, well, actually, that report is all used data that has been fully defined. It's in our data catalog. We have agreed owners. We have data quality reports on that data. So you can really make that decision with confidence. That's a different conversation. And I think we've got to get CEOs or the senior execs to understand that data is so key, and that it could easily make them look stupid, even though they're not. Well, let's hope that most people at that level haven't got there because they're stupid. But a lot of clever people make bad decisions because they've been given the wrong data. And we need to get them to understand that and not just to take, it's on a report, so it must be right.
This is a great conversation so far, but all conversations we have to end because we do have a time limit here. So we're going to end with two questions, Nicola, that we ask everybody. Okay. So first question, who has been the most influential person with you, dead or alive, in your professional career? Who's influenced you the most?
I suppose if we did data governance, I'd probably have to be a bit fangirl and sell you, John. Sorry.
You're the first person to say that in a year and a half of these programs.
Breakfast when I said I wanted to interview you for my blog in the very early days of my blog. And, yeah. And it was just amazing. You were so supportive.
Because you're really good at what you do. That's why.
Oh, thank you, John. And then I think just career-wise anyway, the book that's been on my bookcase since long before I even heard of the word data, let alone anything else, is the Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Successful People. Mm-hmm. And I still tell my clients to go and read it because you've got to seek first to understand before be understood. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's just such a good book for data governance. It could have been written for data governance, really.
Yes, it could have, yeah. Absolutely. The follow-up, Principle Center Leadership, also from Stephen Covey. That's another amazing book. Okay, so here's the second question we ask everybody. You have to pretend you're Harry Potter, okay? And you are allowed to cast one spell to make things right around this world of data. What would the one spell you could cast do? What would it fix?
If I can only do one thing,
yeah,
I think I would go for correct definitions just instantly being documented, because I don't think you can do anything else until you all actually agree what the data is in the first place.
Okay. Very, very good.
Here, here.
Nicola, thank you so much for being our guest. We will talk to you again in a few moments here when we do our world famous, not so much, a game show. So thank you very much. It's been awesome to have you on the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And thanks to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros. If your data is killing you slowly and you don't know it, you've got to have Hubris. Hubris Data Pros. Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Have you heard how pizza can predict the future? Give me a large double pepperoni with a side of national intelligence. It's true. Maybe. I first heard about the Pizza Index several years ago when I keynoted a military analytics symposium. Afterwards, I met with several analytics team members and the conversation turned to the management of classified information, and in particular, the challenging situation where multiple pieces of public data could be integrated to derive something classified. The most well-known example is the presumed phenomenon of increased numbers of pizza ordered in the days or hours leading up to significant, and often secret, geopolitical events and crises. During the Cold War, Soviet intelligence operatives monitored food deliveries to assess government activity. They called it PizzaInt, pizza intelligence. On August 1st, 1990, a record number of pizzas were delivered to CIA headquarters, and the next day, Iraq invaded Kuwait, marking the beginning of the Gulf War. Coincidence? Well, maybe. The belief that such events are presaged by upticks in pizza orders persists to this day. The Pentagon Pizza Report has its own X account with over 200,000 followers. Opinions differ, though, regarding the predictive reliability of this metric, but I understand the appeal. It's like a puzzle. You're trying to put the pieces together to uncover something that nobody else is noticing. The critical ingredient, though, is context. With the pizza index, you have a signal, but you need context to interpret it. But just what information and what context is relevant in each situation? The key may be generative AI, which is all about context, about identifying connections and relationships that might not be apparent to perhaps anyone. Maybe somebody's already tried integrating the pizza index with ChatGPT. Let me know how it went. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Welcome back, Nicola. We are going to play our famous game show, what we call the Audio Rorschach Test. I'm going to play you a snippet of music, and then you will give us your first impression in the context of the data world or the data business or data profession. Okay? Does that sound like something you've been waiting all your life to do?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry to hear that. Okay. So, I would like you to pick I've got four tunes here of royalty-free music, because we still don't have a sponsor yet. If you're in a vendor listening to this, we don't have a sponsor yet. Okay, but pick a number between 1 and 4, and I will play that little snippet of music, okay?
Okay, number 3, please.
We will play snippet number 3. Stand by. Your impressions, please.
My impressions, that's how I feel when I go to work to help my clients do data governance, because I'm happy and skipping and, well, not quite skipping down the street, but it's that feeling of, this is great, I'm going to go and solve problems and make things better.
So you enjoy your job?
I certainly do. I love my job.
Well, that's wonderful. That's a great note to finish. Again, thank you, Nicola Askham, data governance person in the UK extraordinaire. Thank you for being on the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
It's been a blast. Thank you both.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. The benefits of data governance, and are you willing to put in the effort required to get them? Recall that Nicola's one magic spell would be correct definitions, and I think we'd all like that. But you don't need magic, just discipline. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about winning the data governance game, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2025, all rights reserved.